Welcome to Education Currents, a show designed to provide educational news and commentary from a Christian worldview. The greatest resource any community has is its children. And by providing for them the best possible education, we are providing for ourselves and future generations. Join us as we explore the latest social and political issues surrounding education today.
I want to welcome you. I'm Dr. Richard Tooley, and with me here is Peter Rosenberger. And we are going to have an interesting discussion here on a topic that is increasingly important, and that's the concept of caregivers. What's a caregiver, and how did you become one?
Caregiver is somebody who volunteers to care for a vulnerable loved one, whether they're aging, whether they're a child with special needs, or in my case, a disabled spouse, or neighbor, friend, whatever, doesn't matter. Just somebody who is volunteering, not getting paid to do it. Somebody asked me the other day, he says, what's the difference between a caregiver and a family caregiver? And I said, well, I don't get a paycheck. You know, this is not something I do for a living. This is my life. And then this is what a caregiver is. They just volunteer to do it out of the love of their heart. They step up. And then how did I get involved in this is that I married a woman who had been hurt in a car wreck a couple of years prior to me meeting her. Just an extraordinary woman. I met her years ago in college. Fell in love with her. I had no clue of what it was like to care for somebody who suffered. I just saw this beautiful young woman. I said, you know what? This is an extraordinary woman. And she really is. She'd had about 20 operations by the time I met her. And that has now mushroomed over the last 30 years of our marriage together to 78 operations that I can count. She gave up both of her legs in the 90s. She's had treatment by more than 60 doctors, 12 different hospitals, 7 different insurance companies, and more than $9 million in medical bills. I've been her caregiver for all this time, and her husband, and we've forged some challenging paths together. But you know what? We're still here, and the divorce rate in couples with a disability is nearly 90%. It's 89 and some change percent. Somebody said, well, what do you guys know that other people don't? And it has nothing to do with what I know. It has everything to do with who I know. And that's what's the difference.
Yeah, caregivers, I'm understanding quite a bit of that. My father is actually my caregiver to my sister, who has stage 4 breast cancer and became quite crippled. But she's come out of it. But he still provides all of the juicing for her and takes care of the house and all of those different things that have to be done that someone who's incapacitated can't do.
Somebody's got to do it.
Yes. And the unfortunate thing is most of the time when people think in terms of caregiving, it's not something that's thought of as, oh, I'm the CEO of a major corporation. Wow.
No, it's a thankless, anonymous job at times. A lot of people that are caregivers are invisible. They lose their identity. This is one of the things I'm trying to do with my book and caregiverswithhope.com, my organization, Caregivers with Hope, is I'm trying to help people learn what does it look like to help a caregiver, and how do you help them step out of the shadows of being eclipsed by someone else? Richard, I can't tell you how many times people have asked me about my wife. I can't count them. But I can count the times they've asked about me.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. So this person who's pushing the wheelchair, this person that's standing in the hospital room corner, how do you help these people? Because they're the ones keeping it on the rail. If I go down, what happens to my wife? If I'm not in a healthy place emotionally, physically, fiscally, professionally, spiritually, what happens to her? And so into this, I'm bringing 30 years of hard-won wisdom of what it looks like to help a caregiver. And it's really not as complicated as you would think. And it doesn't require some kind of 9-point plan to do it. I was listening to some guy in Florida somewhere, and he was offering an 8-week course on caregiver stress. And I said, are you kidding me? An 8-week course on caregiver stress? That makes me tired just to think about it. The caregivers I know, they need something in 8 seconds. And I'm giving it to them. And I put it something in their hands. They can read any. They can throw my book up in the air. Whatever page it lands on, there's something there that's going to help you right then. And it's so easy. You can read it in the bathroom. I know I wrote it there. You know, it's just, I don't try to overcomplicate this thing. I know the heart of a caregiver. I know the life. I know the late night conversations with the ceiling fan. I know the struggling to wonder, is God even paying attention to this? Does he even see this? I know all those things. There's very little that a caregiver experiences that I haven't. I failed at pretty much everything I've done. There's very little I haven't failed at. But into this, I've seen God's faithfulness in ways that I can't even imagine. I could never even fathom it. And I've learned a few things about life, about love, about America's healthcare system, about relationships involved in this thing, and how to speak to the heart of a caregiver, and that's what I'm doing.
So when we talk about caregiving, if you could distill down to the one major issue a caregiver faces that can tear them down, if you could put it into one, what would that one thing that they should watch out for? Sometimes they're the sneaky
isolation.
Ones. The isolation.
Isolation. The caregivers suffer from three I's: loss of identity, loss of independence, and isolation. And in that isolation, and if you just want that one, let's just hammer on isolation, without fail, that's what cripples a caregiver. Because we lose sense of community, we make bad decisions in isolation. We tend to get lost in the vacuum of our own mind. My mind is a dangerous place to go into unaccompanied, Richard. I don't want to go there by myself. And so in that isolation, we've got to have some companionship in this thing. What is it? Scripture says, trust the Lord with all your heart, lean not on your own understanding. In that isolation, we lean on our own understanding. And that's why it's so important for caregivers to be engaged in church and community. And I really stress this a lot in my book, because that's where the community is in church. And that's why support groups are so important. That's why counseling is so important. All these things really add up to just engaging the caregiver in other individuals, because we become so isolated. And sometimes it's isolated because they're embarrassed for their loved one. They don't want to take them out because of their condition. Sometimes they're just landlocked. They just can't get out. But there's all types of things. And one of the things I'm doing at Caregivers with Hope, I'm starting an online support group where people can log in from their phone or tablet, from the hospital, from hospice, from if they're at work and they just want to grab a sandwich and log in to talk with a caregiver. I'm going to do it once a week, live video that you can see me, and you chat and ask questions. Nothing's off limit. It's member driven, so it's private and it's anonymous. I mean, you don't have to tell everybody your story and your name. You can just log in and listen to caregivers talking about their journey and learn something from it, because that isolation is crippling.
Yeah, and that isolation actually can be creep up on you.
It's a slow boil.
Yeah, it's not something that's there today, and you could go to church, be heavily involved in your church, and be isolated.
Caregivers can feel isolated in a crowded room, because we feel like we're the only ones that are experiencing those things. So that's the other part of it. There's emotional isolation and there's physical isolation. Both of those things will absolutely cripple a caregiver.
You know, you see this a lot of times, and it kind of goes the same way when you see a single person out there, and then suddenly all of their friends are married and they're still single. Suddenly they find themselves isolated because the rules of the game change. And so you can be sitting in a community that you've been in, you move to a caregiver status, and suddenly all of the relationships change that you had before, because you're in a different situation. Now you're isolated.
You are isolated from your social group, all these kinds of things. And in that, and that's such a beautiful point there of comparing it to single people, married people, and so forth. The rules do change. People with children and people that don't have children, you know, all those kinds of things. And community, you know, the first thing that God's eye said that it was not good, John Milton said this. He said, it's not good for man to be alone. That's the first thing that God said, it's not good. You know, and this is before the fall. He said, it's not good for man to be alone. And, you know, that loneliness is what grips us. And ultimately, our relationship with God is that beautiful, complete metaphor completed there with us connecting with our Savior. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Now, sometimes the valley's really long, but because thou art with me. That's the whole point. He says, well, he's with us. That's him pushing into that isolation. He brings it to us. He came into the isolation of our own sin, invaded this world in the isolation of our sin. We were isolated from God as a people, and he has reached into that. And so all I want to do is mirror that.
So as you look at this isolation concept, there's two tracks that I see immediately going off. One track is what the caregiver can do to change their situation, and the other track is what the community can do to take away the isolation. How can a caregiver mitigate some of the problems of isolation?
Well, one of the things that they can do is they got to reach their hand up and say, "Hey, I need some help. This is a problem." You got to recognize. The first thing you got to do is you got to recognize you got a problem. That's the first step towards recovery. If any program will tell you, "Hey, I got a problem here," and you reach out with some trusted friends. Support groups are a huge help. And if you're dealing with somebody, for example, has Alzheimer's, there are Alzheimer's support groups everywhere. Don't try to get weird or funky about this thing of thinking somehow you got to go find the one that agrees with you theologically. You're never going to find the person. It's not church. It's a support group. And you listen to other people wrestle with the same issue. And you learn from that. And then they can hear from you as you wrestle with those issues. Parkinson's, traumatic brain injury. I'm speaking next week to a group of people who take care of patients with traumatic brain injuries. There's support groups for that sort of stuff. Don't do this alone. There are other people who have forged down this path. So I go to a support group tonight. I'll be going to one after this interview. And I'll go to one at least twice a week for me. And I've been doing this 30 years.
You've alluded to the online. There's online support groups. So you got a virtual community.
Well, I'm going to be starting an online support group. I go to an actual in-person support group. And some people can't go to those things. There's not a good one in their area or whatever, or they can't go on a regular basis, or there's not one just specifically for caregivers. I'm starting a specific caregiver support group online. That's okay. What I'm going to be doing for those people who can't. But yeah. Support groups are huge. That's a way a caregiver can say, I'm going to get outside of myself and I'm going to insert myself into a community as a caregiver.
People can't talk your language who haven't been there.
They really can't. And I speak caregiver fluently. And what happens is when we are taking care of somebody, we learn their language. My wife, her name is Gracie. I speak Gracie fluently. I can speak Gracie's language. I know Gracie. Can she speak my language?
Right.
And that's the question. And sometimes she can. There's some things she can do. But for the most part, a caregiver can speak somebody else's language, but that other person they're taking care of can't necessarily speak theirs. That's why it's so important to get into a support group of people that really do speak your language so that you can just talk in your native tongue and just be a person and just be an individual with it and start learning. The other thing, back to this loss of identity they go through, we don't know how to speak in first person singular sometimes. Somebody say, how you doing, Peter? Well, we just got home from the hospital, or she had a bad night. I'm trying to help caregivers learn to speak in first person singular. I hurt. I'm tired. I'm struggling. I'm mad. I'm resentful. I'm scared. Doesn't matter what follows the word I, as long as it's speaking from your heart, then we can start moving in the healing and the recovery process of you regaining your identity. You know, when a codependent dies, somebody else's life flashes in front of their eyes. So, you know, we don't want to be codependent and lose our identity in someone else's story.
Yes. You bring up the concept of identity here. That's part of isolation, is that loss of identity. That's a huge factor.
It all just kind of feeds off of each other, but it stems in that isolation. You're cut off. And into that, you find people are just absolutely crushed under this. And that's what I'm on a mission to be able to do. And to help equip pastors, church leaders, teachers, counselors, whatever, anybody that's sending touches that world of what it looks like to reach, what's the felt need of a caregiver.
How do people in your local church, for example, and I'm speaking about generically the local church. So here's a church, and they've got a person in there who is a caregiver. Now, when you're a caregiver, you're absorbed in giving care. These people in a local church have no way of connecting cognitively with what you're living through.
No, they can't. I tell people, they say, well, how do you talk to a caregiver? First thing you do, you look at them in the eye and you gently, and I mean gently, say, because they're pretty frayed nerves as it is, man. I mean, it's a tough journey. And you gently say to them, I see you. I see you, and I see the magnitude of what you're carrying, and I hurt for you. Now, I haven't offered any solutions because there are none. You know, you can't offer a solution to my situation. I can't offer one into yours. But what we can do is we see each other. We just validate that the person exists, and we see the magnitude of what they're carrying. And then you start saying, look, I don't know what I'm going to be able to do to help with this, but I want you to know I want to walk with you through this to the best of my abilities. That's a good start right there. You've communicated companionship. You communicated that they're not invisible. And then you'll find things down the road. Don't say to a caregiver, for example, let me know if there's something I can do to help you. Well, now I got to think of something for you to do. And then I got to have the courage to ask you to do it. And then I got to hope that you won't screw it up and I'll have to go back behind you and clean it up. And I hope that you're not going to reject me when you come in and see the reality of my life and what you have to do. That's put the caregiver in a terrible spot. Instead, say, hey, I'm at the grocery store. You need some milk? hey, I got a guy that cleans gutters. He's licensed, bonded, insured. The last thing we want is a caregiver on the gutter. I mean, up on the roof. Hey, can I send him over there to clean your gutters? Hey, do you need me to go do your grocery shopping for you? Don't cook a meal. You know, we got that in the South. I'm from Nashville. I don't know if you can tell if I'm from the South here. But, you know, in the South, we got it. Wherever two or three are gathered, there's macaroni and cheese. We know what to do for short-term stuff. But you can only bring so many meals before somebody's got to learn how to cook. You can only give a financial gift before somebody's got to learn to make money and manage money. So there's other ways to help a caregiver. And don't say, well, I'll pray for you, brother. I mean, that's like, what do you want me to do with that info? What are you going to pray? You're going to pray that Gracie's legs grow back? You're going to pray that she gets out of pain, that she's healed? You're going to pray for what? What are you going to pray for? And what do you want me to do with that information? It's like going to the post office, and you see some guy walking into the post office, and he's carrying a bunch of boxes. And you say, brother, you look to be burdened down. I'm going to pray for you. Well, hold the door while you do it. I mean, you know, that's the kind of thing. We can be practical as we pray, as we care for them. Let's don't give them religious platitudes. Let's don't say things like the consolation of speculation, which I call it, which, well, obviously God has a reason for you going through this or you wouldn't still be here. Oh, well, thank you for that. Thank you, Nostradamus and Socrates all rolled into one. Really, what do you want me to do with that information? We can be better than that. Now, you don't have to walk around just all crying and wringing your hands. I mean, as you could tell, I'm kind of goofy. Listen, I love laughter. That's one of the big things I recommend is for people to do things that are funny. And I listen to stand-up comedy. I read funny books. I download apps that tell me jokes to my phone. You know, anything to keep that lighthearted because a merry heart, that's a good thing. And so there are ways to help a caregiver. You know, a church can do this. For example, if you're really good with guns, you're a gun aficionado, and you really are good with it, go to your pastor and say, you know what, I'm really good with guns, or you're a law enforcement officer, whatever, and you have all types of experience with this, because there's a woman somewhere in a church whose husband has just been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, who's a gun owner, and she doesn't know the first thing about it, and grandpa's coming to the door with a loaded .38 in his bathrobe. Who's disarming that gun? Who's safety in that weapon? Wouldn't that be a great ministry to that family to say, you know what, I'll be glad to come in and help safety all the weapons. You're not taking them away. You're not confiscating. It's not a political thing. We're not doing the Second Amendment. We're just being safe. We grandpa driving the car if he's got Alzheimer's. That's a 6,000-pound weapon or a truck, whatever. So these are little things that you can do for a family that's going through things like this. For example, a woman who just had a situation where she's having to take over the stuff because her husband got sick or whatever, and he was doing all the bills. She's never done the checkbook. Well, does she know how to do the checkbook? Do we have a CPA in the church who may want to sit down and spend some time with her to show her how to make sure budgets and taxes and all that stuff are paid? That's a thing that a pastor can say, oh, now that's a need we can meet. We can connect two people. All of a sudden, you're not sending a check. You're sending a service. And you're teaching somebody how to function and create a sustainable lifestyle for themselves. That's what I'm on a mission to do. And as you do those things, you get to share Christ in a way that most people would never even expect.
Well, you are talking about something that is very healthy for any church. You know, so often we don't think in terms of what we do for others, but what we tell others. And it's
get out of the business of advice and get in the business of just serving.
And the nature of the service that you give, it doesn't have to be profound service.
No. Bring over a gallon of milk and save me the trouble of having to get in the car, go over there, fight traffic, go to the grocery store, and get a gallon of milk. Just let me know that you're thinking of me. How hard is it to get a gallon of milk? The gutters. The house, the body's going to be in disrepair. The house will be in disrepair. Maybe somebody needs some weeding done. Maybe you need to sit with them while they go to their own doctor. 72% of caregivers don't even see their own doctor. Well, that's not a good thing. So, hey, when's the last time you saw your doctor? Can I sit with him? Can we work out something till we sit with your loved one so that you can go? That's a great gift. How much does that cost?
That would actually be quite a nice gift, I would think.
Yes. It's an important gift because we want caregivers to see their own doctor regularly.
You know, again, part of this, and I don't know how you fit this in, but I'll take it back to a mother who just had a newborn baby. Someone at some time has to tell that mother, put the baby down so that you can take a shower.
One would think.
And I think along the same line, when you're talking about caregiving, you can get so absorbed in that process that you don't disengage.
The difference is we know that child is going to grow up. When you're taking care of a vulnerable loved one like who's disabled, mm-hmm. you feel guilty if you leave them alone, if you take a break, because they don't get a break. My wife never gets out of pain. Never. She's not had a conscious moment without severe pain. I've seen the MRIs and the x-rays since 1983, since Reagan was president, his first term. But I'm not in pain. But I still have to take a break because I serve her better and I care for her better when I'm in a healthy place. Healthy caregivers make better caregivers. I'm no good to her if I become burnout.
That is a distinct difference. If you go lay a baby down, they're going to lay down. It's not like something bad going to happen to them if you lay them in the right spot. When you're talking about somebody who you're giving care to like that, now this is where it's nice to be able to have someone who's qualified spell you.
And you may need skilled care, but you know what? That's a great thing that a church's ministry, Mercy Ministry, can contract with local skilled care providers and say, you know what? We'll do this once or twice a month. They can go to a support group or they can go to their doctor or whatever they need to do, and we'll provide a skilled care. You're not sending a check. You're sending a service. You're creating a sustainable infrastructure for that caregiver. Maybe you need to sit with that loved one so that caregiver can go back to school and learn to be more proficient in their field. Because employed caregivers, I have found, make better caregivers than unemployed caregivers, you know, and so financially healthy caregivers make better caregivers. What we had a situation here recently in a friend of mine's church where the wife was the sole provider. She's a physical therapist. Her husband has MS. She lost her job through downsizing, no fault of her own. But everybody was in a panic. Okay, she's got two kids and a husband with MS. They finally got it all worked out. She got another job. And I told one of the guys at church, I said, well, how about this? Look down the road. Maybe work it out so she can go get her master's or something. So she becomes even more of an expert in her field. So the next time this happens, God forbid it does, but at least she's more valuable to the workforce at that point.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, you can't eliminate the risk, but you can minimize the exposure of it. Simple things.
The kinds of advice we've been getting here are going to be very, very useful both to churches as well as the caregivers themselves. We're coming to an end here, and I wanted to just talk about this book here, your book, Hope for the Caregiver, Encouraging Words to Strengthen Your Spirit. Where can they get this book?
Anywhere books are sold, certainly Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Christian booksellers. You just go to caregiverswithhope.com at my website, and I'll send you a free chapter. You opt in with the button. There's a little thing there, and you just get a free chapter. And then it'll take you, you get it through there. There's a link to get out the book and all that kind of stuff. It's really easy. And it's a simple book to read. I don't know a lot of big words, Richard, so I didn't use a lot. I know my fellow caregivers. You can throw this book up in the air anywhere you want. Here, I'll prove it to you right now. Pick a number between 20 and 220.
35.
35. Any page you go to, there's something that'll help a caregiver. I was talking about this from the movie Zorro. When I first started on this journey, I put my life on hold to help my wife's life improve. After doing this for some time, it dawned upon me that I could not wait for her to get better or worse before I took a step to live a healthy life. And I quoted from the movie Zorro, Don Diego to Alejandro said, "Oh yes, my friend, you would have fought very bravely and died very quickly." That's what we caregivers do. We'll fight very bravely, but we'll die very quickly. We'll burn out. And then what good are we?
Yeah, then you've lost the capacity to help.
And go and take care of your loved one and come back and pick it right back up. You take it to the doctor's office with you. That's why I designed it specifically for this. I know my caregivers. I know them. I know their heart. I know their tired schedules. And I'm here to help.
So those people who are listening out there, go.
CaregiversWithHope.com.
CaregiversWithHope.com. Go there because your loved one depends on it.
And if you're not a caregiver, don't stammer and stutter over what to say to a caregiver. I've already figured that out. Just give them the book. It's 30 years worth of experience. Put it in their hands.
It becomes a gift.
It does.
So it also helps them to be able to learn how to talk, too, and take care of
it. It's Rosetta Stone for caregivers.
Yes. So go for it.
I just made that up, Richard. Rosetta Stone for caregivers.
That's a good one.
Well, thank you very much. We'll be playing here all week, folks. Yeah.
Well, I want to thank Peter Rosenberger for being here.
It's a real treat, and Richard. Thank you for what you're doing.
It's always enlightening to me, too, to see this, because I've struggled through this, and I also have been on the side where someone has come up to me and said, you know, I'm praying for you, and I'm going, why?
Yeah, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
What do you want me to do with that information?
So you just gave me all these
and
prayers.
And I want them to pray for me. I do. I appreciate that. But let's be specific.
Yes. Make it meaningful.
Make it meaningful. We know how to do that. It's we can do that.
So anyway, I want to thank you. And as we say at the end of this program, just keep learning.
You have been listening to Education Current, a production of MRG Media Ministries. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.